Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
Whoa.
Why did I say it like that?
I don't know.
My tongue was not obeying the rest of my brain. Like, I don't know what was going on there. Anyway, go ahead.
I don't know, Margo.
I don't know, Margo.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we're going to be covering Sherlock Season 1, Episode 1, A Study in Pink.
Yes, A Study in Pink. We've been really looking forward to actually doing Sherlock because it is super fun. We have our usual, and it's going to be caveats today. Why? Because that is more of a Sherlock kind of word. and they include that there will be cursing, most likely, possibly. There will be spoilers. If you've not seen this show, you should. It's awesome. And we are having things to drink. What are you having to drink, Natalie?
I am having, and there's an explanation for this, because I don't usually drink this wine, but I am having Boda Box Pinot Grigio. The reason for this is that me and my roommate were making a pasta earlier this week, a mushroom gnocchi pasta, required some dry white wine, and this was the best we could muster. And so it's actually pretty good. It's
really,
it's more fruity than I was anticipating, which I like, and so I might try it again in the future. I don't know.
Well, interesting. And you get to drink it straight from the carton. Like milk.
I mean, it's a small thing, by the way. It's not like a whole bottle. It's just it's a small little carton. It's one serving.
Got Boda.
Got Boda.
There you go.
Recyclable.
And it's environmentally friendly.
It's grapes and cardboard. Let's go. All right, Mom.
Awesome. I am having a drink that I am calling A Study in Pink. Mm-hmm. This was a study for me. So I wanted to just tap into our stash of pink sparkling wines, but Natalie, being the pink sparkling wine connoisseur that she is, said no.
Correct.
For instance, some of the things we had in the house were a bottle we bought her for Christmas, so I couldn't have that.
Correct.
There were the Underwood pink bubbly cans, but there were only two of them because they are hard to find.
So. There are some in the cabinet.
Okay. I didn't know that. Whatever. we also have Iron Horse Brut Rosé. We got a couple bottles of that, but I didn't want to open a whole bottle. And, you know, Iron Horse is really awesome. And I actually did have this, the tasting that we had out there. It's really, really good. And I know you want to try some. Correct. So instead, because we already had an open bottle of Gruet Bubbly, I decided to create something that I was going to try to make pink. So I started with the concept of I will get some sort of juice that is pink. Pink grapefruit juice is, you know, it comes in giant things. And I didn't want to do that. So I found a Mott's apple juice with watermelon burst, thinking that that would be pink. You can't actually see it. So I thought, this should be pink. So I poured it into a glass. I'm like, it's more like peachy pink apricot color. And I'm like, that is not what I was going for. So I added Chambord, which made it a little more pink, but it's not like, you know, it's still more red than pink. And I was like, I'm not really happy with that either. So I added raspberry puree, which it does make it pinker. The flavor was a little bit too sweet. So I put a couple of drops of lime juice in it. And of course the bubbly on top of it. And it's not pink. It's okay. It's arguably pink, but hey, I also have water in a pink glass, a pink cup. So that counts. And I consider this to be my Study in Pink homage. So there we go.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Do you want to begin, or like, how does it taste? How does it taste?
It actually is really good. So it's got a lot of like berry flavors with just a touch of extra sweetness from the watermelon, a little tart from the lime, and it just seems pretty balanced. I like it.
Okay, well, let's get started. With episode one, A Study in Pink. We start out with John. It's John Watson. I'm not going to mess around. We know who this is. He is having Afghan war flashbacks where he was injured and has PTSD. Yes. By the way, this John Watson is played by Martin Freeman, who is fucking amazing in this role. Like, everyone is just so good in all of the roles that they have. It's just, it's incredible to watch.
Well, I can't say this, you know, we've seen Martin Freeman in a whole bunch of roles, and he does play the everyman pretty consistently.
But this is an everyman with layers.
Yes, exactly. And I love that. And we get to see them explore it. And considering that this is not a show that has megatons of episodes, they are long episodes.
Yes.
It is nice to see them kind of delve into the nuance in the ways that they do.
Yeah. John lives a very lonely existence. He lives alone in a flat in London. And I am going to be calling them flats because they call them flats. And it was easier to write down. He talks to his therapist about how he hasn't written his blog about everything that happens to him because nothing happens to him. Just you wait, John. Anyway, we see a man talking to his girlfriend on the phone, then taking a pill under duress. He dies. Then we see, like, it was apparently an affair, and his wife gives a statement. It's a whole thing. It's an apparent suicide. We see two other deaths happen in a similar way. Scotland Yard's Detective Inspector Lestrade and Detective Donovan hold a press conference about them being serial suicides and not murders. And whenever they say something wrong, everyone's phone gets a text saying so. And there's this one line that's very funny. One of the reporters is like, if they are murders, how do people keep themselves safe? And then Detective Inspector Lestrade is just like, well, don't commit suicide, which killed me.
But you know, throughout this press conference, they'll say something and these text messages come through for both the reporters and the police officers. Wrong, wrong. And they're starting to get aggravated.
And at the end, the detective inspector gets a text saying, you know where to find me, SH. So we can assume it's Sherlock Holmes. So John is walking in the park and he runs into an old school friends from school. Where they did medical school at Bart's hospital. And they talk about how John needs a flatmate, and the friend Stanford, he has an idea because somebody else talked to him about that earlier that day. And then we go over to Sherlock, who is in the morgue with Molly Hooper, who is in a doctor at the morgue. I don't know what her job title is. He's beating a corpse.
She's the ME. She's the medical examiner. She does the
ME. Yeah. Medical examiner. Not the coroner, but the medical examiner. Correct. Anyway, so he is beating up corpse to see how long after death bruising can happen. And Molly clearly has a massive crush on him. And who wouldn't, because it's Benedict Cumberbatch.
Benedict Cumberbatch is hot. And he's like, again, you forget how young these guys were when this was made too. He looks a little bit baby-ish with this, but he's still got, and it will come up in later episodes, he's got those cheekbones and
his blue eyes, his hair.
He's just cute. He is.
And nothing against Martin Freeman. He is also attractive, but Benedict Cumberbatch.
He's not dreamy. He's cute.
He's so dreamy.
Anyway, so John and Stanford come in, and Sherlock essentially reads him like a book. Like, he knows he's been to Afghanistan. He knows that his brother or sibling, at least, won't help him out and be a flatmate for him, and that his brother's an alcoholic and all that stuff. He also mentions the psychosomatic limp that John has because, okay, just be out of pocket, why don't you?
Yeah.
And he gives him the address of 221B Baker Street as the address to meet him later for just meeting up to see if they want to get a flat together.
Yeah, and the whole time, Moss is kind of like, how do you know all this shit? What is going on with you? And yet he's so intrigued.
Of course. And then another death happens with a girl wearing pink.
Yeah.
Studying pink. Sherlock knows the landlady, Mrs. Hudson, and insured her husband's execution, which gives them a reduced rate on the flat.
Mrs. Hudson is the best.
I love her.
Later. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
John found his website, The Science of Deduction, and he's just talking about how, like, he's apparently able to identify all these people by random things about them. And then Lestrade, the detective inspector, he pulls up to ask for help because this new person who died left a note, and he wants Sherlock's help to figure out what that means. And so Sherlock is super excited and brings up that John is an army doctor. He, again, deduced this pretty easy. And he's like, seen a lot of violence. And John's like, yes, enough for a lifetime. Want to see some more? Oh, God, yes. And okay. The operative phrase, usually it's the game is afoot, is now the game is on.
The game is on, baby.
So Sherlock in the taxi explains he's a consulting detective, and he reveals how he knew so much about John. How his phone gave away that it was a present from his sibling, but estranged, and all that stuff. It's a lot of little nitty gritty that we're not going to write down every time. It's a watch thing. You have to watch it to understand.
Well, right. And he goes through it in this like incredibly fast paced way. Like you can see how quickly his mind is assessing all of this data. Mm-hmm. Like, he just seems to process huge amounts of information very, very quickly.
And the only thing he gets wrong is that Harry, the sibling, is short for Harriet. That's the only thing he got wrong. Anyway. They get to the crime scene and Detective Donovan, her name's Sally, she doesn't like Sherlock at all. And he implies that her and the forensics officer on the case are having an affair.
Yeah.
I'm sure you washed his floors by the state of your knees.
Whoa.
And you're both, and he's talking to Anderson, who also hates him, and Anderson, who's the forensics officer. And he's just like, oh, you're wearing cologne and it's for men. And he's like, of course it's for men. And he's like, deodorant. So is Sally.
It's deodorant. And they're like, it's for men. He's like, of course it's for men. It's like, it's the same one Anderson's wearing. Oh, sorry.
It's the same one Donovan's wearing. Yeah. It's very funny. Anyway, the dead woman, Jennifer Wilson, apparently scratched the beginnings of Rachel into the floor, even though Anderson thinks it's Raha, which is revenge in German. Like, it's not that. And immediately Sherlock closes the door on him. And so he deduces that they're all murders and her pink suitcase is missing. And that since it's pink, it's obviously a dead giveaway for the murderer. And so he's going to go look for the suitcase. And well, Sherlock runs off without John.
Right. And John's like, what the fuck just happened? Because you see in this dynamic that, you know, Sherlock obviously is running way ahead of pretty much everybody else there, but he doesn't share all the information that he has. And so it's actually really very funny. Now, when so Watson goes looking for Sherlock. And part of how he goes looking for Sherlock is, you know, he steps out, obviously, of this apartment. He's told by Donovan, hey, you know, yeah, he took her off in a cab. He does that all the time. You don't want to be friends with him because he's a psychopath.
And psychopaths get bored and maybe one day he's going to kill somebody.
Right. And so Watson is like walking down the street and you hear phones ringing, like phones in these red phone booths. You have
the classic British phone booth.
Classic British phone booths. And after like the third or fourth one, he finally picks up the phone and there's a voice on the other end of the line. And it's clearly that they're using the street cameras watching him. Mm-hmm. They send the car in. They're like, get in the car and come to
your situation is clear to you, sir.
Yeah, basically. And so he rides in this limo with this woman. Her response to everything that he says is like a sarcastic, yeah, sure.
Because she's a gorgeous woman and she's used to getting hit on by everybody.
Well, it's not just that he's hitting on her. It's basically he's trying to get information from her and she's not going to tell him anything because this is secret squirrel shit and she's just not going to do that.
Secret squirrel shit?
Secret. It was a old cartoon a long time ago. Like Boris and Natasha, you know, like, anyway, but, or Secret Agent Man, whatever, you get the concept. So he ends up at a warehouse, and Mark Gatiss is there. Mark Gatiss is one of the show writers. He's also a show
creator.
And creator. We've mentioned him, he came up on Game of Thrones, but where we know him most is in Sherlock. Mm-hmm. And we don't know immediately who he is, but he seems like an enemy, and he even portrays himself, he says he is Sherlock's arch enemy.
according to Sherlock, at least.
Yeah.
And also, there's a really funny line of, he does have a flair for the dramatic. And then John goes, oh, thank God you're above all that. It's so good. I really love the banter in all of these scenes. It's such a well-written show.
That is really one of the best things about this show, is how well-written the banter is. Stephen Moffat also writes on this.
He's great, too.
And he is fantastic. He also was a writer for The Office. The British Office. And he's been on a whole bunch of stuff. He's, again, the quips, the quotes, the everything.
It's a very quotable show, and there will be quotes later, including this one of he's talking about how John doesn't seem very frightened, and John's just like, you don't seem very frightening. And he's just like so over this shit. He's just like, do whatever you want. I don't even give a shit anymore.
But what he does say, so this guy who is the arch nemesis says that he wants to pay John, because clearly John needs money. I'll pay you to get information on Sherlock. And Sean's like, fuck no. I'm not that kind of guy. And so he's driven back to 221 Baker Street.
I would like to point out one more line that really just encapsulates John's character, especially in this first episode. You're not haunted by the war. You miss it.
Right. And that's something that the arch nemesis says to him. And John's kind of like, because part of what he says, he notices, and it's a Sherlock kind of thing, which would be a tip off, that he's like, I can tell by your hand that you're not afraid and that you're not haunted by the war. He's like, what do you mean? He's like, most people would be nervous in this circumstance and their hand would be shaking. You're supposed to have a nervous tremor, because he has all of John's medical records.
And we've literally he has the therapist notes, he brings them out. And
he says, you're supposed to have a nervous tremor in your hand.
And he did at one point, like we saw earlier with Stanford, when because Stanford had this one line, which is actually very funny, that I wanted to point out, of I thought you were getting shot at. What happened? And then he's like, I got shot.
but the nervous tremor, he's like, you're supposed to have a nervous tremor. Your hand has been still this whole time. You miss the war. And it's kind of like, and John's kind of like, fuck, I did. God
damn it.
And being an adrenaline junkie myself, I get it.
John goes back to his original apartment to grab a gun, Chekhov's gun. And he tells Sherlock, when he gets back, he tells him essentially, like, this is what happened. And then Sherlock is like, oh, we should have split the fee lap next time. Don't do that. We could have gotten like extra money and extra income. That would have been great. He's very unfazed, even though he basically says that's probably the most dangerous man in Britain. Anyway, he has John send a text to the dead woman's phone that is with the killer to meet at Northumberland Street. And Sherlock apparently found the suitcase in the dumpster, but the phone wasn't there. So he's under the impression that the killer still has it, whether knowingly or unknowingly. And so John gets a call from the phone, which shows the murderers panicking. And so they're like, okay, well, we can catch this guy as long as we go to Northumberland Street and we can see if we can catch him. And so they go to a restaurant and watch for the killer, and they see a cab parked for too long and they think it's the passenger. And so they go running across London and trying to catch up with the cab, and John actually leaves his cane. So psychosomatic.
He's running. Not a problem.
And they get to the cab, but it was just a tourist. So that's not very helpful.
The passenger is just a tourist.
And they get back to the flat and confirm that John will be his flatmate, because he was proven right about the psychosomatic limp, I guess. Like, it makes sense, I guess. So the restaurant owner brings back John's cane and, again, realizes it's psychosomatic. The police have raided the flat for drugs, for a drugs bust, and it's revealed that Sherlock was a junkie. And we get this great line from from Sherlock in response to Anderson being like, psychopath, I see it now. And he just says, I'm not a psychopath. I'm a high functioning sociopath. Do your research.
This will come up again. It is a great,
it's a great line.
It is very revealing. Also,
he's acknowledging he has a problem, but he's like, at least diagnose me with the correct problem.
Yeah, because I know what my diagnosis should be. But I do. I love this whole interaction between him and all of these guys. Like, you can tell how much Anderson hates him. Like, the way they convey their personalities and how they have interacted over time is so well acted and well directed. I'm just very impressed.
Yeah,
impressed. So
Rachel. Sorry.
What? Yeah, keep going.
Rachel is revealed to have been Jennifer's stillborn daughter. And Sherlock has this really tone deaf thing of like, why would she still be upset about it?
And then and everyone's staring
and
at
And then everyone's like, nope, not good at all. And then
what was the other thing that he says to Watson too?
Well, it's like, but if you were dying, if it was your last moments and you had like one thought left, what would it be? And John says, please God, let me live. And then he's like, be creative. And then John says something very interesting. And I kind of picked up on this the last time I watched it, of I don't have to. He's been in that position where he has been nearly dead.
Yes.
And so he's just like, but if you were like smart, like, but what if you were smart?
She looks like, you know, be creative. If you were actually in the situation, she's like, I don't have to pretend.
Yeah.
In there.
And so he also makes Anderson turn around so he can think, because so he doesn't have to look at his stupid face. It's so funny.
It was just so penetrating, I guess.
So Sherlock realizes that Jennifer planted her phone on the killer, and Rachel is her email password.
Yes.
And they can track her phone, which turns out to be at Baker Street, which everyone's confused by. Because regardless of the whole thing with the case and all that stuff, even if it was in the case, it couldn't have been in the case because the killer called them back. So I mean, there's no way it could have been there. And so Mrs. Hudson's also telling Sherlock about like an insistent cabbie who has shown up and shows, and he like comes up behind Mrs. Hudson and shows Sherlock the dead lady's phone, and without anyone else noticing. And so Sherlock has figured out that it's a cabbie. He's the one who's able to hunt in the middle of the crowd without anyone blinking an eye, and he's the one who knows London well enough to know some dark corners where he can plan a good murder. But what he wants to know is why and how. And so he follows the cabbie to the outside, and the cabbie tells him that he needs to come with him to find out how he got them to kill themselves. And so he goes with them because that's what Sherlock does. And so the cops think they're wasting time and start to pack to leave. The cabbie basically tells Sherlock that he has a fan and he was warned about him. And then Lestrade, Detective Inspector Lestrade is one of my favorite characters in the show. And
really?
Yes, and I think
the actor. I
love the actor.
Years is fantastic.
He was in the 2020 Emma. He was
in
Mr. Weston.
Right. He was also in Room with a View as the younger brother to Lucy.
I haven't seen Room with a View in a
while. Oh, I love that movie.
I know you do. Anyway, but I really love Detective Inspector Lestrade because he is a normal person and how about I put it this way? If on a spectrum of people who like or respect Sherlock, we have John on one end and we have like Donovan and Anderson on the other. Detective Inspector Lestrade is like right in the middle, where he appreciates all of Sherlock's help. He's desperate for all of his help. And he has this one line that I think really encapsulates this entire thing. And it does come back later, which I love. Lestrade tells John, essentially John's like, why do you put up with him, all that stuff. Lestrade tells John that he thinks Sherlock is a great man, and one day, if we're really, really lucky, he might even be a good one. Yeah. And I really love that line because Sherlock has this amazing ability, but he also pisses everyone off. And so It's just interesting to see how people react to that. Because again, Detective Inspector Lestrade, he takes everything very seriously with Sherlock and all that stuff, but he also sees him as a human and wants to help him in the best way he can. I think he's just a very fascinating character, and I really love this actor. I know that's kind of a bizarre person to latch on to in a way, but I think in this rewatch, I think I've liked him even more.
Well, again, he gets to be the true everyman here, which yes. Watson sort of is. Watson,
but he's a biased everyman in this one.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the cabbie takes Sherlock somewhere quiet and shows him that he would force them out of the car at gunpoint, and so he's just like, oh, all right, how uninspiring. And then
well but the cabbie's even like, but I don't have to do that with you.
I don't have to do that with you. You want to just know how it happened. So John sees the phone's new location and goes there. The cabbie pulls out two pills, and whichever one Sherlock chooses, he will choose the other one. It's very Princess Bride.
I was going to say, never get involved with Sicilian when death
is on the line.
This is like so, what's his
Princess
name?
Princess Bride.
It is Princess Bride, but I can't remember the character.
Fezzik. Fezzik. No, Fezzik is the giant. Fezzini.
Okay, I'm not crazy.
Sorry, I don't know why I said Fezzik. Anyway, Sherlock deduces that the cabbie is actually dying. He has an aneurysm in his head, apparently. And he has a sponsor who gives him money for his kids for every kill, which is a very interesting line of work.
That is fucked.
That is fucked up. Sherlock figures out that the gun is fake. It's a lighter. And he doesn't have to take a pill, but he still chooses a bottle. And
what the fuck is this?
And the cabbie convinces him to take the pill with him because he wants to prove he's right.
This is now this last part. Once Sherlock actually picks a pill container, and I know I can't say I noticed this. Your father noticed it, but I did notice in the earlier suicides, it would be a bottle with two pills in it.
Right.
Which now it's just two separate bottles. So you get the feeling that
that the cabbie was lying.
Well, right. But yeah, that the choice actually is only for Sherlock.
I think that makes sense because I think that the other people getting a choice makes no goddamn sense.
Right. And here's my other thing is I think, you know, much like in Princess Bride, it's like they're both poisoned.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I think. Yeah, the choice and the whole idea of like, I'm going to take the other one is kind of stupid because it's just like, well, you're already dying. Why would you take that chance with these random strangers who you don't care about? Like, you're clearly just going to kill them. So, and if it gets your kids more money, you're just going to kill them. I think at this point, he knew he was at a dead end. In like he's going to get caught by Sherlock or he's going to just die. So I think I think that is a valid point. I never thought about it like that. But I did notice that there were two pills in the bottle for every other one but this one.
Yeah.
But good job, Dad. But good job, listener. But I think that it's interesting. I think it makes a lot of sense why his attitude has changed towards like the whole choice thing of there is a possibility that he gave them a choice between the two pills in that bottle, but regardless, I think both of them were poison, and I think that in this case both of them were definitely poison.
Absolutely.
I think that he was just bluffing the entire time and being like, let's all die.
But one of my points is once that pill's choice is made by Sherlock, we start seeing this intercut with Watson running through a building, which we think is the same building that Sherlock is in. And so you know, he's running. And right at the point when there's going to be Sherlock taking the pill, we hear, we see that Watson sees Sherlock and the cabbie and realizes this is a life.
He just went in the wrong building. Life 360 sucks like that sometimes, you know?
So he's in the building across a courtyard.
Yeah.
And he's screaming at Sherlock, and of course Sherlock can't hear him.
Of course.
What he does is He pulls out his gun.
Chekhov's gun.
Chekhov's gun. And we hear a shot and it hits the cabbie.
Really quickly, I would like to say, this is absolutely nothing to do with Sherlock, but it has to do with Chekhov's gun, is that I was listening to this podcast that I used to listen to a lot, and it's musical splaining, actually. And it, of course, that's very me. But they were talking about The Sound of Music and how at the end... Yes. They were talking about how the nuns coming in clutch at the end is Chekhov's nun. I find that very funny. Whenever I think of Chekhov's gun, I think of Chekhov's nun. And now I just imagine like a nun with a machine gun or something. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's so funny. Chekhov's anyway. Nun
who takes things out of your car, you Nazi, you.
Anyway, hot take, the Nazis are awful. Anyway.
Yeah.
Not even a hot take anymore. Anyway, so let's see. So yeah, John shoots the cabbie. Great shot, by the way.
Oh God, it's an incredible shot. Like, he shoots him like in the shoulder, and the
Sherlock is kind of in the way.
Right. So the cabbie stays alive long enough for Sherlock to stand on his shoulder and force from him who it was that put him up to this.
I just love that the first thing he asks is like, "I was right, wasn't I?" And I'm just like, dude, I think both of them were
boys. I do too. Like, you haven't figured this out. But he's like, "Who put you up this?" And he yells, and this is
actually your sponsor, my fan.
Right. This is one of my worst parts. He's like, "Mariachi!"
Why is that one of your worst parts?
Because it's so like dramatically stupid. It's like a bit much the way it's screamed to me.
He's in pain, Mom. He's dying.
Yeah.
That's his final word. That's actually kind of sad that that's his final word, but it's helpful for us. Anyway, so Sherlock, the police have shown up, and Sherlock is sat in the back of an ambulance with a shock blanket over him, and he just is like, "Why do they keep giving me this blanket? I'm fine." I love it so much. And then, like, Detective Inspector Lestrade is just like, "People wanted pictures," and so.
But this
Sherlock figures out, like, he's like, Lestrade is like, "Oh, we have nothing to go on who killed him, though." And Sherlock is like, "That's not necessarily true." And he starts describing John, and he realizes he is. And he's like, "Actually, never mind. It's the shock. I have a blanket and everything. It's the shock."
I don't know what I'm talking about. Just ignore me.
There's this very funny interchange I'd like to call attention to. He goes to John and he's like, "Good shot," and John's like, "Oh, it must have been." Yeah. And he's just like, "Okay, come on, dude, I know what you did." Anyway, yeah. He's just like, Sherlock says, "You killed a man," and John's like, "It's true, but he wasn't a very nice man." And Sherlock says, "No, he wasn't." And John says, "Frankly, he was a bloody awful cabbie." And Sherlock says, like, "Did you see the route he took to get us here?"
And they start giggling and they realize this is inappropriate. It's like, yeah, well, you know,
we're a crime scene, dude. There's a dead body. Anyway,
yeah, but that banter, that bonding between the two of them is so
important.
Great.
Yeah. They run into his arch enemy.
Right. Who that turns out to be Mycroft Holmes, who is
his older brother.
And so they,
you know how it always upsets mother.
Yeah, well, right.
Mother, Sherlock
even says to Watson's like, "Oh, that's your brother?" He's like, "Yeah, imagine Christmas dinner." That is foreshadowing. Then
yes, but also John's like, "Oh God, no." No.
Yeah, well, and Mycroft then says, "We're going to upgrade their surveillance status on both Watson and Sherlock, and so they're going to be doing the government's going to be doing greater surveillance on the team. And that's the end of the episode. What were your best parts?
I feel like I'm gonna have to go vague for some of these because it's just there's so much. I feel like it's gonna be similar to like our Harry Potter series where it's just like they're so long, and I don't know if there's a particular moment that I love. I mean, I love the shock blanket stuff. That's hilarious. But the character intros I think are fantastic. I think all of them really work very, very well. Like, you get adjusted to the world very easily, and even like smaller characters, I say smaller, but like more peripheral characters like Molly, who will come in clutch later, and Detective Inspector Lestrade, Donovan, Anderson, all these little people. I hate to put it like that, but yeah, people who are not necessarily always integral to the story, like Holmes and Watson, but they're all well introduced with very unique personalities, and that's always really nice. And so then I love the chemistry with everybody, but especially Sherlock and John. I think they have great banter. I think that everybody, again, has great chemistry in this cast. Like, the casting is just perfect. The music is so good. I love the music.
I didn't note that, but the things they have, and they have this, like, building music. It's kind of like, you know, running through the streets music, and you're just kind of like, I'm sorry. I'm stealing your best parts. Go ahead.
That's fine. The comedy. I really love the comedy in this. And that part of that's like the shock blanket thing. And again, the banter is just so witty that, like, every time you watch it, you discover something new. And I really love that about this. And that's, I think, how a mystery in general should be, regardless. Yeah. And it's not even only the mystery elements. It's because the mystery elements are always fully explained to us. But I really like how, just in general, like, the little mini things here and there are just so fun to see. I like the banter between every character. I think they're all unique. I think, for example, even between, like, Sherlock and Molly puts on extra bit of lipstick, and she comes in and he's just like, you're wearing lipstick, you weren't wearing lipstick before. And then she takes it off because she thinks that he doesn't like it, and then he's just like, why aren't you wearing the lipstick anymore? And she's like, oh, it wasn't doing anything for me. And he's just like, no, it actually was a big improvement. Now your mouth's just too small now. So it's very funny, like, back and forth between everybody, just like little things like that. And the mystery, I really like this mystery. It's not very hard to solve, because as soon as you, like, notice the whole cabbie thing, it's just like, I mean, obviously it's the cabbie. If it wasn't the passenger, it was the cabbie. So, I mean, I like that it's not trying to be super duper clever about it. I think there are certain kinds of mysteries, and I love mysteries, so I'm well versed, but there's certain mysteries, and there are very different kinds of them. There's the Columbo mystery, where you already know who it is, but you get to see how he picks it apart and how he figures it out, which I also really love, the dissection of it. You also have, like, an Agatha Christie, which is, like, almost impossible to solve sometimes, because it could be...
He throws in just shit right at the end.
Literally! Like, the one Agatha Christie novel I've read, I was just like, I have no idea who it could possibly be. Like, every single one of my leads was going wrong, and then she's like, by the way, it was this person. I'm like, what? I'm sorry. No, it could not have been. And then I was like, but it was. It's like, what? Okay. But I feel like that's me with every mystery, though. I love mysteries, but I'm also really shit at solving them. So
you have not watched enough Ritmox yet.
So. I know, I need to. I'm gonna watch some Poirot and stuff like that. Well, I'll make it a little bit,
like,
better.
They have, like, hundreds of different kinds of
mystery. I know they do, and I'm very excited.
English Village, because, you know, English villages.
So. But I love, like, Murder, She Wrote. I love Murder, She Wrote. They're, like, cute, sweet, contained, and just, like, if you want a little quick mystery and you can probably figure it out, like, that's what I love. Like, whenever I'm doing, like, a lot of homework in a day, I probably just throw that on and feel good about myself. Anyway, also love Angela Lansbury.
Who doesn't love Angela Lansbury?
Literally, this is fun. Yeah. We love her. Anyway, this is a very unique kind of mystery where I'm not focused on the mystery, oddly enough. I'm focused on the character dynamics. And I think that that's a very distinct voice from what the others are. A majority of them are just procedurals that are just like, we're focusing on one mystery and then we're just going to, like, completely fuck everything up. But then there's this kind that is so focused on the character writing, which I really love character writing. When it's very specific and you're trying to expand the characters, it's very important to me. And Does that make sense? Like, okay, good. Because it might be the white wines talking, because at this point, I'm just kind of rambling. But
so I just, Natalie got Boda? Yes. Yes, you do.
I got Boda. I got Boda'd. Either way, I think that it's all just very well written. And I think that the mystery element is a fun background in a way, because it gives them something to do and move the plot forward and stuff like that. But I'm not super focused on solving the mystery because I know they're going to solve it for me. And they vocalize everything, or it's put on text on screen to see the Mime Palace and stuff like that. So it's not like you're going to be making any observations. They're not. So I kind of like it in that way, because it puts you in like the back seat in a way, where you're just like, I'm just going to be taken through the story and see how these character dynamics form because of the mystery, not just the mystery, figuring it out, you know?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Go ahead with your best parts.
All right. So my best parts, obviously, are the Sherlock Watson dynamic. I think that their interaction as characters is just terrific. I really feel like both separately and together, they are fully formed characters, which I really, really love.
Yeah.
I love Mycroft just like this kind of
foil. Mycroft's so funny to me. Him being like, he's always so dramatic. It's such an older brother mentality of like, or just even a sibling mentality. It doesn't even have to be an older brother, but it's just a sibling mentality of like, oh, this person's so this. And you are also. It's just like, yeah. My brother's yeah. So dramatic. Couldn't be me. It's just right. Like,
what are you trying to say, Natalie?
No, that was just an example. But you know what right. I mean? That I already so know true. I'm dramatic. Like, that's not news to me.
Maybe. So yeah, like I love Mycroft. I love I actually like this mystery as a mystery, because I feel like it has, you are able to break it down into segments. It's not super complicated, but you are able to break it down. I love the use of London. So like, I love London anyway, been there a couple of times. Every time I have loved it. And it's not, I could do like the same things in London, like the Tower of London. Literally every time I go, I've got to go to the Tower of London because there's something wrong with me.
Well, because it's so cool.
It is so fucking cool. But in any case, it is,
My Lady Jane.
Yeah, that. But among the things that are cool about how they use the physical location,
mm-hmm.
They do like this montage, like running after the cab, with, you see all of Sherlock's thoughts about what streets are closed and what street signs are, like which is a one-way street and where the cab's gonna have to turn, and just how knowledgeable he is about that space.
I wish I could be as knowledgeable of him about like as him as like I don't have a map in my head. Like, you and Dad are really good about that. I'm just
to a large extent, yes. But it, again, first of all, it's a skill that predates you.
Yeah, second, it does. It really does.
But you need to learn to find your way around without GPS. It really helps you a lot in life.
And to a degree, I can, but it's just,
but that kind of spatial knowledge, I think, is very helpful. Yeah. But I think too that I watched. Lucy Worsley, I don't know if you remember her, she did a whole bunch of series on like the English royal family, like historical mysteries and that kind of stuff.
Oh, on BBC?
Yeah, so she just, it's on PBS actually.
PBS, sorry.
Right, so she
complete the two.
Started doing a series on the mystery of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Like, he was obviously the writer of Sherlock, and how much he hated
Sherlock Holmes stories, not Sherlock right. The show.
Right, Sherlock Holmes stories, and how much he actually hated being confined by that, because the popularity started to like just basically.
Well, it's the whole reason for the Reichenbach Fall. Because right. What I also love about these. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm just saying that what I really love about these is that they're especially with like just the episode titles. It's based off a study in Scarlet. It's a study in Pink. Like, it's what's funny, and they do this especially later on. They like start like really, once they go into the blog section, they really start doing that. And the only, to be clear, the only Sherlock Holmes story I've read is The Speckled Band, and I don't like snakes. Spoiler alert. So that did not do well for me. Sorry, go ahead.
Anyway, so what she mentions is, of course, this first one being a study in Scarlet. He wrote that whole thing. He had not lived in London. He'd visited London one time for like a couple weeks. So he was not as familiar with London. He wrote it. All of his knowledge of London at that point was based off a map, like 221 Baker Street. He just like picked it randomly. So, but it then like expanded into this giant thing. He had been a doctor, honestly. And so like some of the medical stuff that Watson has, and it's an interesting series. We watched the first episode. It's kind of fun. I will point out that I really love how they do this use of intelligence, but I think, you know, what you are loving about the character use, some of it's present in stories. Obviously, if we read The Speckled Band, you see this. Some of it's present, but it is not present to the same level as Sherlock the show, which has, I've got a hats off to Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat. They've done such a terrific job with this.
I agree, but I also think Benedict Cumberbatch brings such a charisma, but also like unlikableness. Like he is okay with being an asshole. But he's also, his cadence for this role is perfect. And the fact that he's able to talk so fast and like just spout all of these things
He has endearing mania. Right.
Yes, exactly. And that's a great way of putting it. But I think that his way of just spouting out all these facts, but you also catch all of it, like it could be very overwhelming for an audience. But honestly, personally, I don't find it overwhelming at all. I find it very like interesting. I'm like, oh, no, totally. I get the pieces. Right, I understand all of this stuff. If I was really observant, I could get this.
Right. But if you miss a nuance, if you miss like one of the phrases he uses, you're not missing the essence of it. And I think that is a tribute, like you said, to the actors and to the directors. And
Because I think that a lot of people, and I don't have anything to prove this or anything, but I think that some people could get annoyed about the like mind palace, like words popping up, but it's like, maybe thinking that they're like pandering or anything like that. I don't find it like that. I think that if you can't catch it with like your ears, you catch it with your eyes, and you are just like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Because like, especially when he was examining the body, that was especially helpful because you can't always tell if like something's, you know, wet or dry or whatever, because he's able to tell like where she's coming from, where she's going, because of like the weather. Yeah.
Well, and like the wedding ring,
especially like it's a 10-year-old wedding ring, but she often removes it, and that's the only polish it gets, and all that stuff. Like he's able to deduce all these things, and you're able to keep up with him, which makes you feel smart, even though you're just reading off of a TV screen.
So there's a lot of great about that. So what were your worst parts?
Just a bit long. I think that there are certain sequences that take a little while, but. I don't know. I think in many ways it does justify the length, because if it were just nonstop breakneck pace, it would be too much. And I think that giving it the little beats, like the little montages, like of them running through London or them, I think that everything in there, it's as long as it is, I feel like it does have very tight writing. Yes. I think that it, and even though that's a complaint of mine, it's, they all do it in service of the story in many ways, and like especially like the traversing through London is to show that Sherlock knows London like the back of his hand. And again, not that we needed more of like evidence that Sherlock is a genius or whatever, but it's very nice to know that they are going to be using London in this space. It's like their own personal playground in a way of like, this is, I chose this street because I know it so well or whatever. And so I think that's very good. But at the same time, there are a few things here and there of like, these are intro things. Like a pilot has to introduce you to the world. And I think this pilot does it very well, but it's a bit long. It is a bit long, but I can get past it.
Okay. So my worst part is only, the only thing I wrote down was that Moriarty line reading.
I don't hate it.
Well, I don't hate the length for this episode. And I say that with a caveat. There are other episodes of Sherlock that I definitely think are too long.
I was talking about the Moriarty line, but sure.
Right. I know. But in response to what you said, there are episodes that I think are too long. This isn't one of them. I think it is well constructed for what it is. So I gave this, my grade for it is an A. And I will say this for each show that we have covered. I tend to try to grade within the show itself. Like a grade for an episode is going to be like, this is an A episode for Sherlock. I would this be an A episode across the board? Probably, yes. But
yeah, I think so.
I think so. But there are shows like I gave an F to that episode of The Crown.
Right.
Would it be an F episode of, say, Friends? Probably not, because
we aren't covering Friends, Mom.
But I don't have expectations of Friends that I have from a show like The Crown.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
And I think within the realm of the show, that's where my grades fall. Like, and I'm thinking about it particularly in context of My Lady Jane, which I don't think is a particularly great show, but within the context of the show, I think my grades were accurate for the show
itself. I agree. And I think that that's the best way to do it, of like doing it within the context of that particular show. Because if you're trying to compare it to like Game of Thrones or anything, My Lady Jane getting an A minus at all is ridiculous. I love My Lady Jane. It's a very fun watch. However, we gotta be realistic here. Things I gave A minus in Game of Thrones compared to My Lady Jane, completely different.
All right, but I'm sorry. A minus in Game of Thrones is gonna be 100,000 light years.
I know. But at the same time, I think it's fair to do it within the context of the show, especially if we've already watched it.
Yeah.
And so I think that it's just easier to do it like that. And so within the context of Sherlock, I do agree it is an A. I originally was going to give it an A minus, but I think it is an A because it does everything so masterfully.
It does.
And we get an introduction to this universe that really helps ground us for the rest of the show. And like, this is the pace. This is what you're going to get. And
it pulls you in. Like, you love these characters. You're like, oh my God, I want to see more.
It makes you establish some trust with them, which whether or not it's broken at any point, we'll talk about that later, but it establishes a trust that they know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And it establishes a trust that if you're going to get introduced to a new character, regardless of if they like die or the mystery or whatever, they're going to get a rich backstory in some way. Cause even the first guy who died from the like serial suicides, whatever, he got this whole thing of like an affair partner, which we did not need to know. But
they did it in like they did it in minutes. Like, you know, within that conversation, like, she's a lover. She's and you know that there's a wife. You know, within a couple of minutes, you know that this was
a complicated relationship. Yeah. And it's so funny because it's like, no matter what character you're going to be introduced to, you can trust that they have some kind of merit or they have a world within themselves. And that's what I love. Like, cause I'm not the biggest fan. Oh, okay. I understand the need for like, for lack of a better term, red shirts. I understand the need
for disposable characters.
I get that. However, whenever they have a mystery surrounding a person, they make sure to make their world as rich as possible.
Yeah.
And I think that's extremely useful whenever you're crafting a mystery or even any media of any kind. I think you need to have like rich backstories and such. And I think that most of that is just my bias as a like ensemble performer in musical theater, coming up with my own shit because I wasn't given any like direction of like what my character was like. I'm just like, I'm coming up with my own backstory, but they've already done it for you, which is nice. That's very nice. Anyway, I really love this episode. It's a great episode and I'm looking forward to watching the rest of this.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more to cover.
There is a lot
more. I don't think of them necessarily as seasons, because each season is three episodes. But I think that there are certain seasons that I prefer to others just because of like maybe there's one episode that I'm not like the biggest fan of. And we'll get to that. But I think this first episode in particular is great. So it sets
I
up
do
a
too.
great season and it's going to be consistent, I think. So at least in my opinion.
Yeah, me too. So I am looking forward to, we are looking forward to having you join us. We hope that you do. And cheers.
Cheers.